listening to The Hawk 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.
You're listening to a show called Dangerfield on 101.5 The Hawk FM. I'm Mary, and tonight my guest is Jim Bryson. Jim Bryson is a Canadian singer-songwriter and record maker. He has released 6 critically acclaimed solo recordings. In recent years, he has been recording and producing records for artists from all over the map in his studio called Fixed Hinge, which he built in 2013. One of the most recent albums is the August 2020 release of Kathleen Edwards' Total Freedom, which he co-produced with Kathleen and Nashville resident Ian Fitchuk. A member of singer-songwriter Kathleen Edwards' touring band, Bryson has also toured and recorded with many other artists, including Sarah Harmer, The Weakerthans, and The Tragically Hip. So welcome to the show, Jim. How are you doing?
Mary. Oh, my gosh. You know what? I try to have, like, you know when you read the back of a book and a writer's bio? The writer's bio would say, Jim Bryson was born to a Portuguese mother and raised by an Irish Catholic / Anglican co-family. He is 51 years old, released 6 records, and lives with his family. Like, you know, music bios are always like, in 2012, Matt Mays then returned to the stage with the French retelling of his original song. It's like music bios are so long, and writer bios would just be like, Mary O'Connell is a writer and poet who lives in the city of Toronto.
You're right, because the books always leave so much room for other people's summaries, right?
Yes, because everything in the book is like, they always have all the thing, like, you don't get a record and get a 5 pages of, like, quotes about the book, right?
Yeah, that's true. And then put them on the record before it's released, right?
Wow, I just bought from Matt Humanoff Guitars in New York City. I just bought a 1977 Martin classical guitar because I'm entering my Willie Nelson phase of life.
And so did you buy it just by, like, kind of seeing it online, or...
Yeah, I get these email notifications and I was just like, oh my gosh, this is the kind of guitar I'm looking for. Why is it priced so low? Because 70s and they're not as valuable and all that stuff. So then I just called them and said, blah, blah, blah. And I said, can I put this on hold? He's like, no, I don't do holds. If it's on the website, it's there. Anyway, I got like 5 calls, like the snarkiest, like New York City guy. And then I was like, okay, hold on. I'm just going to give him my credit card number then. He's like, oh, hold on a second, Jim. And then I said.
Oh, and then you had to ship it to Canada, right?
Well, actually, I shipped it to Detroit because I have a friend there, so I'll get it from him.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And how many guitars do you own?
I don't answer those questions.
Well, why don't we?
I'm just joking. I don't know. I have a lot of guitars I use, and then I have like things that I bought at garage sales and things that some of them I have in the idea that I can use them for some things, and then I don't know if a friend wants to take a guitar home or something. Like, it's like community, right? So, and then some are things that have been left here by people who record it, and then they're just kind of here, and they're like, why don't, can I leave this here for a while? That kind of thing.
And then, so let's start, let's play a song of yours. Let's start off the show with maybe one of the most recent songs that you put out. So September 2020, you put out a song called Nights of 1,000 Sleeps featuring Caroline Brooks.
That's true.
Okay, let's listen to that and we'll come back and we'll chat, okay?
Awesome.
Oh, watch the water boil in the percolator. Those kids we could not spoil. Every day not listening. The nights of a thousand sleeps. Watch from the bedside table as the rain it flows through the eaves. To every drop we're listening, not listening. Spend my days on the phone, waiting for someone to say, let's get the fuck out of this place. 'Cause everyone stopped listening. I tried to trap the season from turning to another one. Listen to the silence of the thousands leaving in the beauty of the setting sun.
Nights of a Thousand Sleeps featuring Carolyn Brooks with Jim Brayson. And Jim Brayson is joining me tonight on Dangerfield. So Jim, that song, so you put out a bunch of songs called the Survival Tactics Series.
That's amazing. When you were saying you put out a group of songs called and then you paused, I was like, I don't even know what they're called. People didn't ask me. Are they called the... That's not a bad name, actually. I had so many concussions that I have really like bad short-term memory. So
from hockey or what?
Somebody says, how about that song that you put out? What was that called? And I'd be like, oh, what was that song called?
And do you ever have trouble remembering lyrics when you're playing?
As I get older, I have problems remembering lyrics of new songs. I seem to remember the old songs that I've played a lot. But then sometimes out of nowhere, I'll just like, I won't remember a song. I won't remember it at all. Like the beginning. And then once I'll just ask somebody, does anyone know the first line of this song? The last show I played was an outdoor show in the parking lot of like this really great local establishment that does a lot of food events and things like that. And the owner has a 1962 Land Rover pickup, and they call the beers and bands and blankets or something. And the performers would perform in the back of his pickup, and they would have lights set up and everyone would be on their lawn chairs and stuff. And then he put a fire pit in front of the stage where the pickup is. And then they did like a menu and all that kind of stuff. And it was so nice. And I was going to say that I was playing a song and I started it and I thought, I don't know how this song goes. I know how it ends. I know the middle. I don't know the beginning.
And is that when you ask for a sing-along?
That's when I just say, can somebody tell me what the first line of the song is? Or we're going to be here for a while. And then someone will shout it out and I'm like, oh my God, I'm back. It's almost like that leaves the track for a second, you know?
And what's the shortest song you've ever written and what's the longest?
The shortest song you've ever written. Well, I can tell you I don't have really long. I'm not a jamming guy, so I wouldn't have super long songs. I have a song called, I have two really short songs. I have one that's called The Options, which is actually a really fun song, and Basil Donovan played bass on it.
Nice.
From the Blues Rodeo crew. And when I had the song, I said, you know, Basil, I know it's not my best song. He's like, well, it's not. Or I said, I know it's not the best song in the record, but I really like it. He's like, Jim, it's not the third best song in your record. And I thought, he's so funny. But it's a good song. That's a good song to play.
Cool. Let's listen to that song later.
Or we can do it now. We can play songs whenever we want.
Yeah.
See, we're only on audio, so I can't see it, so I don't know what the rules are. It's called The Options. Let me look it up. Oh, yeah, it's from my record Where the Bungalows Roam. And it's And it's 2 minutes and 14 seconds long.
Good things come to those who weigh the options and don't stay out too late too often. The things you used to find so funny, have you headed for the hills? I'd be headed for the hills myself as well. So put in a call to whoever can chase this foul, foul weather so far away. Myself as well. Good things come to those who weigh the options and don't stay out too late too often.
But I actually have a song. I had a band, and it was my friend Chris Page, who releases solo records on his own and then has a band that's very like almost like Super Chunk Giant meets Dinosaur Jr. and they're called Camp Radio. And we had an all tenor guitar group, which means four strings, like they'd use in the Kingston Trio. And I had a song in that group that was less than about a minute 30. But the options is 2 minutes and 14 seconds long. I like it. I use a lot of Prophet 5 synthesizer on it.
Well, in the days of mixtapes, like those songs were gold, right? Because you'd be like close to the end of making a mix and need like 1 to 2 minutes, right? So they almost came in.
And they were also cool, Mary, right? For the beginning of a mix, because sometimes you'd want to be like, I want to get going.
Pigs on the Wing was a good one that I used to use, Pink Floyd.
Oh, yeah.
Like a 1 and 2. So you could start with the 1 and end with the 2.
Oh, that's so good.
Mm-hmm.
The band The Descendants,
California
band, they have a song on their last record before they became All, because the singer went back to university. They had a song called All, and all it went, and while it did that, he went All. On the second side, they had one that went no All, and it went on.
Oh, that's funny.
Side one was the first song. Was All, and it just had, and then side two started. So I think each side started with that.
Is that so people could be like, is that All?
Well, okay. I think the whole idea of it was that
That's All?
They were going to change their name from The Descendants, but they hadn't announced that the singer was going to leave the band. So they did the All bits as just sort of an homage, and they called the record All. As in, get ready for this. You don't know what's happening yet, but we are about to become a different band.
Kind of like, wasn't that the story behind the Guess Who, where they were like going to be called something else, and it was like a marketing thing, and then everyone started asking for the Guess Who? Is that a true story? I feel like I read that.
I don't know. I have a lot of fun writing jokes about Randy Bachman on Twitter, though.
Really?
He plays himself every week, and he works himself in multiple times to...
That's so funny that you mentioned that. I've thought that as well.
I know, right?
So it's like this CanCon funnel, right? Of like royalties.
It's more a funnel of himself. So he'll do a thing like every time, no matter what the theme is, Randy can find a way that you will not... you will... be blessed with his songwriting, and then he can get
I've got to look that up then on Twitter. That's so funny. I've thought that as well, listening to his show. Like no matter what time you kind of like stumble on it, it's like Randy Bachman playing Randy Bachman, or a version of Randy Bachman.
He even did mashups, and he did a song. He did a Rolling Stones song and went into Sympathy for the Devil, and he went into Hank. Something in like his own song he meshed it with, and I was like, oh Randy, like come on, just give us a minute here.
Let's listen to a song by Randy Bachman. No, I'm kidding. Randy Bachman. Actually, you did a cover that you shared recently of a Tom Petty song, correct?
I did, yeah. I had been asked to be on a Tom Petty compilation, and I recorded this version, and at the time I really didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I don't know, I'm not into this. And then there was a local punk rock thing where people record songs at home, and I can't remember that. Of course I can't remember the name of it. But and then it was everyone doing covers, and it was all Tom Petty, and I was like, oh my gosh, it wasn't all Tom Petty, but I had that Tom Petty song, and I thought, oh, I'll just do it on this, and then it's like for friends and things like that. I did a Free Falling, yeah. I don't know, it's too depressing, maybe is the problem.
People want to hear it, they can visit you on Bandcamp. And so, so you're on jimbrayson.org for the website, instagram.com/jimbrayson, and also on Bandcamp.
Jim Bryson space Bandcamp on Google. I bet you'll get to my Bandcamp.
Oh, yeah, you're jimbrayson.bandcamp.com. That's
I am? Well, that's so good.
By Jim Burson called Mama Tried. And you actually did an interesting thing where you put up like kind of like the different parts of the song. I guess they're called stems and allowed people to kind of do their own mix. So what was that like? Did you get some good responses from that?
No, I did. I got people that did some really, like, I have a friend who's a PhD and is in experimental music. So wow. He did one where the song,
I didn't know that existed. What is that? That's crazy.
Well, you study all the noise, this really cool, like Steve Reich and all this stuff. And it's like experimental music. It's all over the map. Like anything where, you know, Pink Floyd stretches it out or Miles Davis as he hit the 70s, Sun Ra, all this. It's just like, I mean, I'd be lying if I knew that you could get a PhD in experimental music, but it makes sense once he told me he was doing it.
And does it involve kind of like things that, like, not normal instruments as well? Like, so things like, for example, I remember once when I lived in Kingston, there was this like art exhibit north of the city, and they basically made music from like a tree. So they attached these kind of like sonic things to the end of the tree, and then as the wind blew, it kind of created music from it.
That would fall under it, absolutely. And it's all kinds of jazz and environmental music, or like environmental, but like field recordings and different. I mean, I don't know where a rock band is in a regular song and when they're hitting a little bit of an experimental thing. But
and have you ever looked through any of those? Like, so that I've seen it, like in COVID, for example, I've seen there's been some projects where it is kind of like world source music, like you mentioned field recordings. So some people like recording the sounds in their neighborhood and then uploading it to a map, like that kind of thing. I've heard it done as well with like nature. Do you ever like take kind of sounds that you find online that are available and then like integrate them into your music?
I have indeed. I have, I am going to admit to a crime right now. I use the BBC. Sound effects library, which was just put on, and it is, I will click on the link here. It is, there are so many thousands and thousands and thousands of sound bites.
Really?
I will not lie that I have used some and just tagged them in songs. Like I put dogs barking in each ear, like that's sort of a Pink Floyd thing, I guess. And yeah, I love elements of experimental music and all kinds of music put against songs.
And so do you ever do that thing where like you'll kind of move the song around? So like if you're hearing it from like your left ear, and then you'll hear it in your right, like that kind of thing, like where the sound's kind of moving between?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I like that a lot, like doing panning tricks. Yeah, it's really fun. I read a good quote that said if a song is too pretty, add an annoying noise to it. And it was, yeah, something like if something seems a little too sweet.
Well, that's like, I always hate when songs have like car horns in them or sirens, right? Because if you're driving, it's so.
Oh, yeah. There's a Feist song that has all that where you're, it turns into this thing where at the end of the song they have somebody with a microphone and they walk out of the room or the restaurant that they're all talking in, and they go out on the street. Mm-hmm. And then it's all the street noises, and then a car passes, and on the radio of the car is a different song from the record.
Oh,
remember like Kiss Destroyer before Detroit Rock City, there's a piece at the beginning of Kiss Destroyer where it's a guy coming out of a building, mm-hmm. and getting into his car and starting it up, and it sounds like it's like a Corvette or something. It sounds like a muscle car, and he turns on and he goes through the different things on the radio, and there's things, and then it lands, and then suddenly it's like the Kiss song, and you can hear like elements of that song, and then it morphs into the song.
Okay.
So there's lots of examples of that.
Now that you mentioned that, like Pink Floyd does, I'm thinking of
they do so much.
Like Meadows or Echoes or Metal, where it's like the soccer chant, and then it goes into.
Oh yeah.
No, that one. Is it called Echoes and Off Metal, or is it called Metal and Off Echoes? I can't remember.
Oh yeah, well, Metal is a Pink Floyd record. Is it like Sid Barrett? Late Sid Barrett is Metal, isn't it?
Have you ever seen Pink Floyd?
No, I had. I was one summer when I was still in high school. I had a chance to see David Bowie or Pink Floyd because I couldn't afford both, and I went to see David Bowie, and it was okay and it was good. But I couldn't help but think: imagine if you would have gone to Pink Floyd.
The sliding doors of life.
I just don't know, because I was like a new wave kid and I played synth and I was into like all kinds of stuff. So I was like, David Bowie, I love his like all the sounds and all that stuff. And I only learned how to play guitar when I was 19. So I was a piano kid. So I played synth and I borrowed a guitar once in high school and learned a couple of things. It bugged me that I didn't know how to do it already. And that the learning curve was going to be steeper. So I just stopped. But then when I got into like Husker Du and the Replacements and all those bands, I wanted to like make up songs and sing them. So, yeah.
And you were in a band called Punch Buggy that Ian McDonald was in, right?
Ian McDonald, yeah, I wasn't in the band anymore when Ian McDonald was in. That's funny you mention Ian McDonald, because he lent me drums for years here, and then he got a place where he could play them. Okay. But now he's moved again, and they're just going to be stored, and he asked if he could bring them back, so now I'm going to get his drums again.
Okay. And so
In a version of Punch. I was in the initial lineup, and we did a lot of touring. We did like, I remember, I mean, it's okay now if you're, you know, someone that's lives in a bus or something or lives in a van, but we did the first year I was in that band, our first year and a half, we did like 150 shows. Like we would do multiple shows in the same day, you know, in different stuff. Like you play an all ages show in the afternoon and you'd be like, so I decided I didn't want to be in the band anymore. And then they were making a record and it had more keyboards and stuff in it. And Ian McDonald was in that version. But then the guitar player left that replaced me and they were going to New York to do a showcase for CM, what do you call that? Whatever it is in New York. And it's not CM. It's
CMJ or...
CMJ, yeah, that's what it was. And then Ian was in that version of the band and we got pulled in at the border and we actually got a refused entry. Yeah. And when they did the interviews, Ian and I were in the same interview. And in the interview, I went first and it was funny because our drummer our one singer went, because everyone sang, so one of the guys went first.
The interview at the border.
Oh, no, when we were inside and being taken into private rooms to be interviewed.
Right, so for some reason I was thinking interview like about the show, but like you're at the border.
And they're talking about how they're going to send us to jail for the night and stuff like that. And the first guy took like 45 minutes in an interview and we're sitting there going, oh my God, we got to get going. Second guy, who was our drummer with dreadlocks, he went in there about 30 seconds and he brought him into a different room. And then Ian and I were up next and we went in and they said, okay guys, what's up? What's the gigs up? Okay. Mm-hmm. One of your friends told the truth and one didn't. One of them's going to jail. What are you guys going to do? And I said, I'm not really in this band, to be honest. I was hired for this. I used to be in this band, but now I'm not. And they asked me to fill in. Yeah. I actually don't know what's going on, but if you ask me, it does seem like it's a very, like it's a tough thing to say that nobody will see the show. So, but as far as I know, nobody, except for those who are specifically invited to this private show. And then I said that, and then they go, okay. And they go to Ian, okay, what's your story? He said, well, I'm not really in the band. And then they said, now no one's in the fucking band. And I turned to you and I was like, you can't use my story. That's my story. You have to have your own story if you're going to be. Yeah. So anyway, they gave us lots of threats and lots of things.
You didn't have the proper permit?
Well, they were sneaking in because they didn't have a visa.
Yeah.
So they went under the, because they wanted to play CMJ.
Right.
And so they tried to lie, but we used to lie to get in all the time. Before the internet was a really popular thing.
Wait. Well, I remember I had a friend who like came and did a show here. And I remember like it was kind of when the internet was like first starting, and he like, I can't remember what he did, but he either like made like a fake thing that said he like wasn't going to be playing, or like he took, I don't know, there was some sort of like fake profile involved. But
well, yeah, so the fake thing we would do,
yeah,
is in sort of the punk community, everyone, because everything was booked through this punk rock and roll zine called Maximum Rock and Roll. And mm-hmm. they had an issue every year that was called Book Your Own Life. And it was all the contacts around the world of where you could play in those cities and who were the contacts to play. And that's how we booked all our shows. And then we would have a friend in one of the cities that we were going to that we had met. Mm-hmm. And they would send us a letter in the mail that said, great hearing from you, or an early email that said, great hearing from you, can't wait for you to come record, because they would pretend they were a recording studio. And we would get a letter, and we would hand them this letter, and it would say how much we had, even we had paid a deposit and stuff, and it never didn't work.
Really? That's so interesting.
This time their manager, they had a manager after I left because I didn't like their manager either. They were going to get, so that was one of the like, well, I don't want to do this stuff like this anymore. He had told them you should probably not do that. That's, you're not going to get in like that. You should do this instead. And we'll fake some, I don't know, whatever happened, it didn't work. Anyway, Ian and I were there together. It wasn't for like bands who had agents and were like existing in like an industry or something, but for punk bands and stuff that were, you know, on the, I guess it became, it was called DIY, and
yeah. I'm
not sure it was called it by then. And it was like 1993, early 90s, mid 90s.
Yeah. Well, I remember like trading tapes in the 90s with like people from America. Like that was like, you just, that's what really? You did.
I like that. I like that idea.
Did you make a lot of mixtapes when you were younger?
I didn't make a lot. I had a lot of issues with attention. And to make a mixtape, that was a lot. That took me a lot of time. It was a lot of attention. But sometimes I made them, and they were fun. I mean, one of the reasons I didn't make them is that I did not have a cassette with stereo. So yeah. I only got to make them when I moved in with roommates, and they had tape decks, and I could do that kind of stuff, which is fun, because then I was like, oh my God, we've got all this, we've got all these ideas, and I can make tapes for people now. I felt like my world had opened up or something.
And did you ever like tape songs off the radio or off TV when you were younger?
My brother taped stuff by holding a tape deck against the speaker.
Yeah.
He used to tape at the end of the year. We had a station here, and they would do their top 100 singles of the year. And we would record that, and we would
stand for 100 singles and record it.
Yeah, we just keep taping. It was the top 100 songs of the year, and we would listen to that on cassette, because it would go all day or all night.
Mm.
Be able to like listen to it, and wouldn't be able to stay up. But my brother would tape that and then flip the tape over and then put another tape in. You'd miss a little bit here and there, and that kind of thing.
Do you remember the solid gold gas station tapes?
No.
Oh, okay.
I didn't travel very much as a kid, and the only place we traveled was Quebec. So oh, I didn't.
Right.
I didn't,
so did you grow up? You grew up in Stittsville.
I grew up in Stittsville, but my father was from Quebec City.
Okay.
So we—that's the only place we visited, because my mom was from a farming family, where we are, and so my dad's family is all in Quebec City. So we would always go to Quebec, and that'd be the only travel we would do. So I didn't get to enjoy those border. I mean, those highway tapes.
Yeah. So you actually bought your parents' house, right? That you live in? like the house you grew up in, you live in, right?
Yeah, I bought like the family home. Yeah, it's true.
And then
very weird to do, like to have my Catholic father guilt me into buying his house. But that's part of the joys of being Catholic, as you know, Mary.
Right.
With a free complimentary entree of guilt. So, well, you just move in, and I hadn't lived at home for so long, so it wasn't like a big deal, but it was a big deal. And then part of the deal that my dad didn't have to deal with anything at the house. Like, I had to settle all of their stuff, all of their items. He was like, I've taken what I want, so whatever you have to deal with. And I was like, oh, my God's sake. So initially, for a little while, it felt like I'd lost a bet. But, you know, as time passed and years changed numbers and stuff like that, it's become a positive thing, is the best way I can say it. Like, it's positive now. When I first got there, I wasn't so sure of it and stuff like that. But for the first 5 years, even. And then we had somebody move in, like, across the road and over one house, and he was a super nice guy, and like I just happened to meet him, and then we became pals, and I was like, well, I met someone out here now that's like not somebody that was a neighbor of mine when I was a child. So you know what, I decided like our fourth or fifth year in, I was really gonna give it a honest go and be like super positive about things and try it. And then it all kind of, it's amazing what can happen if you decide to be positive.
That's
true. So, yeah. So that's
not about till you said around 4 or 5 years in, was that when you built the studio?
Well, it was, yeah, I would say that once I decided that I really enjoyed the idea of living there and I was getting more into it, I had a friend from Kingston who was sitting in my backyard after we had mastered a record, an O Susanna record, and he had said to me, right there, you could put a studio right there. And he drew it in my like set list book. And I still have a picture, like the picture he did of it and stuff like that. And he drew it basically as it looked. And then he ended up designing it.
You should frame it for your studio.
I know. I need to go find it. It's in one of these, like, I don't throw out anything like that. I do throw out a lot of things, but I don't throw out like set list books and ideas books. I keep those all around. So it's in one of those.
Well, you know, what's funny. And so your website, jimbrayson.org, I actually love that you have the archive of your show list. I love that because I used to have a list of every show that I ever saw. And it's such a good thing to have to like look back to and refer to, I think.
Oh, yeah. And you still have that list. That's amazing. You still have it.
Well, I stopped at a certain point, but I used to see about 200 concerts a year. And I have about a decade of that list, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's funny because then like later on in life, I'll like meet someone and I'll be like, oh, that sounds familiar. And I'll put it into my my search and then I'll be like, oh, I saw them in, you know, this year, da, 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 you know, and it's interesting to keep that. And so why did you call the studio Fixed Hinge?
Lana Gay, who used to work for CBC Radio 3 and then CBC Radio now, I think works. She does the drive home show at Indy 88.
Yeah.
When I had an accident while I was building my studio and I shattered my kneecap and I had to have it put like surgically turned back into a kneecap. It was pretty traumatic actually, as far as falls go. And she sent me a card and she's just like a really nice card. And within the card, she's like, well, at least you have a studio name. You can call it Fixed Hinge.
That's so clever.
Kneecap is part of the hinge. Its only purpose really is to connect the muscles that are on the top of your leg and the muscles that go down to the bottom of the front of your leg. And that if you keep your leg straight without a kneecap, you still can actually move. It's when you try to move your kneecap that the pain really kicks in, I discovered after falling.
You were speaking earlier about, we were talking about mixtapes, and you were saying that you had a bit of an attention span issue. So I've actually noticed that there's a couple times that you have recorded or put out or created a song in one day, and kind of, so I think with Jeremy Fisher, you had a series of shows that you did. And then you also did, I think, a Christmas album all in one day. So is that, do you prefer to work quickly?
I do. I mean, I don't get to do it a lot when I make music, but I love the idea of just doing something in a very short period of time and just having it be something that, not be too precious about it. I sometimes find that when you work too hard on something, sometimes you can polish out all the rough spots, and the rough spots are sometimes the best spots.
Great.
So I do like making things quick, but it doesn't work that way often. But I do love it when it does.
Cut my hand on a barbed wire fence. Bloodstained swat my corduroy pants. Corrugated lies, all the stories we tell. Dried up the water in the wishing well. On a deaf child's ears, money gets spent. Let your love light shine and lock it in. Mama, just please don't tell me how it goes. I seen the signs, the fire in your eyes. Mama, just please don't tell me how it goes. I know, I know, I know, I know. No, I know, I know. Flower petals float down the river to the sea. Papa's in jail cause he planted me to see. Don't belong to me, don't belong to you. Belongs to the man with the patent on our food. Mama, just please don't tell me how it goes. I see the signs, the fire in your eyes. Mama, just please don't tell me how it goes. I know, I know, I know, I know. No, I know. On the falling rain, we've been killing time with a cold-blooded lust. But I wonder if time isn't really killing us. Mama, just please don't tell me how it goes. I see the signs, the fire in your eyes. Mama, just please don't tell me how it goes. I know, I know, I know, I know. No, I know.
That was Mama I Know by Jim Brayson and Jeremy Fisher. It was the second song that came out from their Catch and Release series, where they got together, arranged, recorded, mixed, and released a song in one day. And that one came out in 2012. Jim Brayson joins me tonight on the show. How do you archive the music that you've created? So if you have, you know, let's just say there's like a couple of versions of a demo, do you have a system of how you organize all that?
Well, I used to use cassettes, and then I used minidiscs, actually, which were a really cool format. It was quite big in Europe and never caught on here. Sony really hoped it would, but it didn't.
Yeah.
And then now, honestly, I just use my voice memos on my phone.
Okay. And so when you upgraded to each different kind of type of archive, would you change everything over to the next one and over to the next one, or do you still have those kind of original versions?
Well, I do have I have some Walkmans, and I have my dad's Sony cassette deck he had in his retirement home. I have that. And that I actually started playing some tapes and buying some tapes. Charles Austin from the Super Friends. Do you remember that band?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, like a Halifax band around, yeah, the Sloan time. And I was really into the Lemonheads. And I was talking about this really fancy box set that they put out. Not a box set, but they put out, I guess it's a box set of it's an extended set that they put out of this record, Lovey, that I really liked. But it was only available in the UK, so it would have cost like $100 or something to get it. And so anyway, I got this, like, Charles just sent me a thing, said, well, I have it on cassette, I can send you that. And I was like, oh my God, I'd love to have that, because I'd already bought the Beastie Boys Check Your Head on cassette for my partner's birthday. I mean, the thing was, I bought her on vinyl and cassette, and the cassette arrived first. And the record wasn't going to arrive in time, so I handed her the cassette. She said, well, what am I supposed to do with this? And I was like, well, I have a Walkman. You can plug it into the speaker and you listen to the Beastie Boys on cassette.
This is this year?
It was not this year, but the year before. Actually, it was this year. It was this May. Yeah, in May. And I was so excited. And she's like, I even had like, so I was like, I got you this tape for your part of your birthday. I'm not going to give it to you on your birthday with the kids because it will make sense. And she was just like, I have no idea why you got me this. But she loved it once the vinyl came, because she was super into the Beastie Boys and super into hip hop in high school and Tribe Called Quest and stuff like that. So then Charles sent me the Lemonheads cassette. So now I have a Rolling Stones cassette, which is it's the best of the Rolling Stones, but it's the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Because it has like, it has like one hit to the body and some of like the really borderline bad Rolling Stones hits that are actually pretty great. So that's Rolling Stones Rewind. And then I got Paul Simon's Graceland and Rewind each for $2 at a fancy record store, because cassettes are trash to people, but I still think it's fun.
Well, that's like, yeah, a friend of mine. Do you know Andrew Rodriguez? He lived in Montreal. He gave me for my birthday just like a whole stack of cassettes, I think, last year. And yeah, it just makes you kind of revisit them, like a lot of the albums.
I did this festival series and we were staying at this motel because it's like called the Small Halls Festival, and they go to all these different towns that don't normally have tons of shows. And ours was outside of Gananoque, so we stayed in Gananoque at this motel or something. And so the woman who was doing the production manager, her room was beside mine at the motel, and then she just pulled out a cassette deck with one speaker, like a boombox, but half a boombox. And she just put it down, and we had a beer, and she just put cassettes in and hit play. And we stayed up super late just sitting out front. And then her batteries are going, I think it's God telling us to go to bed. We'll see you tomorrow, Tori. Thank you so much. That was one of the best nights I've had in my life.
Well, that's like, you're talking about Walkmans, and I remember the levels of Walkmans, right? So like when the yellow ones came out and there were all the different versions of it and stuff, it was pretty cool.
Oh yeah. And then it got fancier too, if you wanted just a tape deck or if you wanted an FM radio. Because if you wanted an AM FM radio, it was the
double headphone jacks in the Walkman. Remember that?
So you could listen with friends.
Yes.
Oh my God, you're so right.
Yeah. And they had so, little like lids where like some things wouldn't pan. Yeah. Good times. You could listen with. You should play your Beastie Boys table on one of those.
And then just sit with Lisa and like, here's your headphones and here's mine.
Yeah.
Let's just take 30 minutes. Let's just watch the kids watch YouTube and we'll have that Walkman on.
Exactly. I also really like the song Ontario.
Oh yeah, play. That's a good one to play.
Jim Bryson. So, Jim, can you talk a little bit about the differences between playing music in your band and between playing it in someone else's and what those shows are like?
It's like I have this weird thing with shows where the second I know a show is booked, I'm like, oh, I have to do that show. And once I'm at the show, it's great, but I have anxiety of like getting my guitar together because I always forget something. Like I always be like, oh, I didn't bring the power cable from DI. No, I'll just use their DI. It's fine. And I'm like, oh, but it won't sound as good. So maybe now I have to go find a power supply. Or I'll be like, oh, I didn't bring any merch. Well, who cares? And I'm always like, I always know something is going to get forgotten. And I don't know, when I just have this weird thing, like right before shows, I'm really antisocial. And I think it's like it's incredibly anxiety based where I'm, I feel like I want to play a show where I feel like I'm being shot out of a cannon a bit. So I don't